You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
I am Christian Furlicker, and today I'm talking to the Right Honourable Sally Kapp, Lord Mayor of Melbourne, Australia. Ms. Kapp was keynote speaker at a public event in late March held by the Committee for Economic Development of Australia, CEDA, an independent, not-for-profit membership organisation. Melbourne, for those who don't know, is Australia's fastest growing city. The booming metropolis is adding 327 people a day, and the majority are migrants from all around the world. In her keynote address, Ms. Kapp spoke about a new gold rush, fueled this time not by the precious metal, but by people. What does she mean by that?
Well, the way we are considering this phenomenon that we have at the moment in relation to massive population growth is that people represent the brightest of futures for our city in terms of the talent that they bring to our economy, in terms of their different backgrounds and cultures that they bring to our community. And as we look at our city and set it up over the next decades for the next level of what it can achieve and aspire to as a city, then people form that gold rush, that foundation from which we feel confident about our future.
If it's people from overseas, migrants, is there a certain category of people that you would hope come to Melbourne?
What an interesting question, Christian. We in the city of Melbourne actually have some influence but no real power over who comes to Melbourne. And personally, I think that's wonderful. What we set ourselves up to be is a welcoming city, and we look at our responsibility very much to be that as people arrive into our city boundaries, then it's very important for us to play a leadership role in guiding them into what those opportunities might be for work and realising their potential, and also into appropriate services and accommodation. And the great thing for us as a city is that we are a knowledge-based economy. So in a sense, I do feel optimistic about it, because whatever skills you come with, we can help either upskill, create new skills, new training, new education to help you as a newcomer take advantage of what those future opportunities might be. I think education and training at the core, in terms of us respecting it as a community but also utilising it to shape that future, is important in relation to the many people that come to live here. We have a population of people with that speak more than 260 languages and practice more than 135 faiths. So really, it is about harnessing that rather than trying to stop people coming or even sorting through the people that come. We have to be really open to working together.
And of course, this openness, this vibrancy makes for what Melbourne is, a fantastic city, isn't it? It's also one of the fastest growing cities in the world, and certainly in Australia. At present, Greater Melbourne, 5 million. You mentioned by 2050, the projections are for 8 million. You also mentioned that congestion in the trains, or overcrowding and congestions on the roads, are a problem. However, for you, the biggest problem is pedestrian congestion. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. Well, we are revisiting our transport strategy at the moment, and so we've been collecting a lot of data and also feedback from our community. And it's been really interesting to see in the data that as we look at the productivity of our city, the way that people move around our city, that the majority of those trips are actually done by foot. But when we look at the amount of space available, so infrastructure available for foot traffic, if you like, it's only 24% of our city. So those numbers are so out of balance. And it's not just about the numbers, it's about the experience that people are having. We know that we've got safety issues on our footpaths in peak hours because people spill over onto the roads, particularly around our train stations. We know that we've got issues for our businesses because people find it difficult to stop, look in windows, walk into shops, find places for their business appointments, or frankly, utilise our hospitality services because there's such a crush on our footpaths. We went back to the economic analysis, and what that showed us is that for every 10% of extra walking connectivity we can provide, we get an uplift in our local economy of about $2.1 billion a year. So the numbers are compelling and the experience that people are having is compelling, and we're going to respond to that. We absolutely accept that there's congestion on our roads and on our public transport, but when we look at the rebalance, the biggest bit that's out of balance at the moment is on our footpaths.
Now, I might have a solution for you there as somebody with a European background. In Germany in particular, but also in other cities around Europe, the heart of the city is often car-free. It's a solely pedestrian zone. Is that an option for the Melbourne CBD?
Well, we're considering all options. What we are conscious of is that we're planning for the long term, so it's very much around the transition. And an important part of that transition is helping members of our community and people that come into Melbourne to understand, you know, why we're doing things, what's going to make a big difference, bring to them case studies from around the world, from fabulous cities in Europe that are pedestrianised. I was most recently, I think, probably Munich, and what an incredible pedestrian zone that has. On the other hand, what I would say is that as a city, we're also conscious that for people with accessibility issues that need to travel by car, for emergency services, for deliveries, and for people doing particularly things like electricians, plumbers, so services around the city, we're always going to need to be able to accommodate them in some ways. So how we, again, address that balance, and we do that over time. But you've seen in our city already, Christian, we do have some pedestrian zones like Bourke Street Mall. We're extending the pedestrian zones around our train stations, and we have some car-free zones like Swanston Street. So it feels like that European influence is already happening in our city.
Maybe also Chinatown, I've heard some reports.
Well, Chinatown is really interesting, and it is a big part of that engagement with community, because for our Chinatown traders in particular, they are fiercely protective of having traffic coming down their streets. They like it, as opposed, for example, to other precincts like Little Collins Street, where we've been trialling the pedestrianisation during peak hours for people in lunchtime. There's a section there that's closed, and it's been working really well in terms of bringing people into that zone. So as a city council, we have to be mindful of what our citizens and ratepayers want and balance that with what the long-term visions are.
One last question. You mentioned in your keynote address that John Monash had a fantastic master plan for Melbourne in the 1850s following the gold rush. And one of his masterstrokes was the creation of vast parklands, a green belt. However, not many new parks have been added since, in 170 years almost. Now, I've heard there are plans to change that.
That's right. It was actually our first Lieutenant Governor, Charles Latrobe. And he had a big influence on the city. We've got a street and a university and all sorts of things named after him. And he did a lot of fabulous things as our first civic leader. But one of them was to set out what we call the Emerald Ring in our city, including our botanic gardens and other significant parks. And it was at a time in the 1850s when Melbourne was the fastest growing city in the world as a result of the gold rush. And there was incredible pressure in a growing city. People wanted to keep building houses and commercial premises and warehouses and factories. And he had the foresight to understand that green open spaces are absolutely essential to the health and success of a city, and we are so grateful to him. Because we haven't invested in it significantly for 170 years, we're now trying to retrofit green open spaces into what is quite a mature city. And the only way we can do that is to buy land and return it back to green open space, which is actually very expensive. And in a city where, again, we're clamouring for places to live and work, it's very difficult to balance. But in a city that's looking to increase walking spaces, the way in which we can reclaim roads and on-street parking areas back into urban parks is proving to be a very successful policy and action that we're taking. And we have 8 of those projects underway in Melbourne at the moment. We'll spend just over $9 million on green open spaces this year. And over the longer term, it's about 240,000 square metres of green open space. It's actually an ambitious urban policy, but we're well underway to achieving it.
I've heard that's about the size of 12 MCGs.
12 MCGs. It's a wonderful benchmark for anybody that has been to the MCG and seen the size of it. We know from our experience going and living and working and visiting European cities that those open spaces are as important for visitors as they are for personal, mental, emotional and physical well-being. They provide wonderful connectivity both for bicycles and walkers. In Melbourne, they're our number one tourist attraction. Parks and gardens, but for us as well, it's an important part of how we manage resilience and sustainability as a city, both for the reduction of our urban heat island effect as well as managing storm water, because we have we've got a river that runs through the city and an underground river as well, and during massive storms we're really reliant on those green open spaces to help us disperse water.
And it's also a great place, of course, to walk our dogs, which brings us back to livability, doesn't it?
It does indeed. And I think it's wonderful in our city to see people walking their dogs, because it means they live here as well. It's fantastic.
Lord Mayor Sally Capp, thank you very much for this interview.
Thank you, Christian.
Enjoy more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.